Welcome. We are
Love
live.
Hope Radio.
You are listening to speakonradio.com. Be seen. Be heard. Be present. The place where entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, authors, actors, politicians, creative people and media experts are empowered and inspired to broadcast their passion. SpeakOnRadio.com is a radio platform that has you in mind, bringing you not only inspiration, but practical solutions and opportunities to release your greatness. Tune in now at SpeakOnRadio.com. That is, SpeakOnRadio.com.
Wow, welcome to Speak on Radio. It's the first show that we are going live on Speak on Radio. And today we are going to be talking about how to discover how to deal with the media. How can you get the media to work for you? How can you promote yourself, promote your brand on media for free? And today I'm honored to have a very special guest, an ex-BBC TV producer with many years of experience. He has so much to offer us. Pete Water, are you on the line?
Hello. Hi, Sarah. Yeah, just about. I just made it. Unfortunately, I had was held up slightly before getting here, but I'm delighted to be with you today.
And we are so glad to have you. Pete, we've had obviously conversations around sort of dealing with the media. And I know a lot of our listeners out there afraid of the media, because we hear a lot of, obviously there's a lot of positive press, but there's a lot of negative press in terms of interviews and people have had. And again, the media, the press seem to be out of reach for most people. So be able to, our listeners who have entrepreneurs, small business, have people who are just branding themselves, do you offer them?
I think in general, there is a huge misconception amongst most people in business that the media is going to be out to get you, that it's an sort of evil thing that hasn't got your best interests at heart. And that really comes from a lot of our sort of high media, as it were, with the tabloid press and the journalists that you see going after politicians every night. And the reason I think why the media in the UK is so confrontational, and that is the perception of it, is because it's actually quite healthy, our media, that we do feel like we can challenge people, especially in positions of power. And maybe in other places around the world, that's not always the case. But at the level which most small businesses will be engaging with the media, I can guarantee you from many years of experience that engagement is not something to be scared of, and that you're not going to be challenged and harassed and given a rough ride by the media at all, unless you've done something really badly wrong, in which case it's fair enough that you are challenged by the media. But engaging with the media on the most part is a very positive experience, and is something that will massively help you in terms of getting your message out to a much bigger audience than you can ever otherwise hope to reach, and also in terms of adding credibility to your brand. I'd say that, you know, if you go into a pitch meeting or a meeting where you're trying to raise money perhaps, and you have an identical product to someone else who has the backing of, let's say, the Daily Telegraph, and has had a few articles in the BBC about their product. I think that is an obvious sort of game changer in terms of getting people's attention. So I think there's really for the most part, there's so much more to be gained by engaging with the media than by staying away from it. Yeah.
Okay. So before we get into all that, right? So because we've voices like jumped right in, I'm just going to kind of just do this. Kind of just managing our listeners' expectations. Sure. It's like we're going to be live for the next 1 hour, 24 minutes. So you've got to dial in, and you've also got to either on Facebook or on Twitter connect with us at Sarah Lister. That's my hashtag, my handle on Twitter and on Facebook. Send us some questions, and we'll be able to answer that during the show. But before we actually dive in, Pete, we would like to know, so in terms of where do you know all this stuff from, in terms of your background and how you got into the media? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to, yeah. Well, it's sort of, my background is really that I was sort of born into a kind of semi-showbiz family. My father was a broadcast journalist who worked for the BBC and ITN Channel 4 News. And I suppose his most happy time was as the Paris correspondent for the BBC, where we lived as a family for a couple of years, which was great. And my mum worked in theatre as a set designer, amongst other things. And my sister has become an actress and is very successful, works for the sort of National Theatre, Royal Shakespeare Company, and things like that. And so then it was left to me, and I wasn't so keen to get in front of the camera, but felt that I would be good behind the camera and behind the microphone, so to speak. So I decided to get into production. And after university, I studied history at university, and then managed to get a job on a program about politics. From there, worked a while on political programming, sort of documentaries and some other more hard-hitting standards news programs. And then I moved briefly into comedy programming. I did some satire shows on the BBC. And then I actually decided, as a sort of key musician, it was my life's ambition at the age of 25 to work for MTV. That's what I thought would be the thing to do. And so I managed to get a job at MTV working on MTV News, which is the... at the time, sadly, it's been cancelled now, but back in the mid-noughties when I worked there, it was a daily bulletin on show business news. And that was great fun. I had a couple of good years going around interviewing every single pop star you can possibly imagine, going to lots of launches and just sort of rubbing shoulders with the rich and famous, which was great fun. And then after that, I got into a bit of history programming, which again was my subject at university. I worked on a show for a while called Who Do You Think You Are, which has gone on to become a huge success, not only in the UK, but also in the US now. It's expanded over there, and where celebrities trace their family history. And I had a very interesting time looking into the Holocaust and other sort of major historical events through the eyes of a few celebrities. So that was great fun and very interesting as well. And then I sort of segued again into drama, and I ended up producing a drama show on Channel 5. And that was my last sort of big job. excuse me, before I managed to get into media training, and that was really because my father, after he retired from being a journalist, had set up this media training company. And media training is a bit of a sort of open secret in a way, because it's quite an expensive it's quite an expensive thing to do. And for those people that don't know, and I'm not surprised if you don't know about it, it's where journalists, mainly former journalists, go and coach spokespeople, CEOs, sort of head of press, that kind of thing, from big business and also from big government departments, and sometimes sort of the super rich who have something that they need to talk about in the media. They go and coach them before they appear on the media. So if you've ever wondered why these bosses seem kind of so flawless when they go in front of the camera, it's because they've been practicing for the last month or two with highly trained journalists firing incredibly difficult questions at them over and over again. My dad was doing that, and he wanted to retire completely. So he asked me to take over that business, and I was at a bit of a crossroads because I wasn't really sure about whether that was right for me, but I thought I'd take it on as an experiment, and see how it goes for a year or two. And then as a result of doing that, I sort of realized that I did enjoy it, but I also wanted to get involved with helping out a different group of people with media training. Because, as I said, media training is not really very available to a vast majority of us because it's so expensive. But I thought, is there a way of getting media training of an excellent standard, the kind of standard that I would deliver to these sort of blue chip companies, to a much wider range of people? And so I set up this website called dealwiththemedia.com. That is all available, but perhaps we'll talk about that a bit further. Again, I might have gone a bit too far with
story. It's one of these things, you know, about life and times of the interview, that, you know, everything is interlinked because it's about you, it's about your business. And in terms of sort of going over, wow, you've got a wide range of like experience, like within the media, like politics, comedy, music, history, drama. You've touched all those areas, and which is really good, because one of the in terms of the description of the show, I kind of did mention like small business owners, entrepreneurs, artists, politicians, and some people might just think, really, that one person is able to basically like to connect with all these people, and I said, yeah, I think the answer is yes, because you have a wide range of experience. And what you're saying to us, like, the CEOs get a lot of coaching, and that's why they stand there and we're all wowed. It's like, wow. Of course, we don't see the behind the scenes. So are you saying that anyone listening today has the ability to sound exactly the same, message well crafted, message coming across natural, because they've had media training?
I'd say absolutely. I think it's communication is a skill, but it's a skill that can be taught for sure. And it's just like anything else. The more time you put into it, the more practice you have, the better you'll get. And these bosses have just practiced and practiced and practiced. And I've seen some of them up close and personal. You would not believe, you know, how bad they are. I mean, I went and helped coaching on his speech, a big presentation he was going to give, a big sort of AGM annual ceremony in front of hundreds of people, including all the shareholders. And he practiced this speech for an hour. And at the end of it, said, you know, so what do you think? And I thought, well, you know, it's great, but it would really help if you took the gum out of your mouth. And this was he'd done it. and no one had noticed or thought to tell him that this was a bad thing, to be chewing gum in front of everybody. You know, you could barely hear him, really, when push comes to shove. And I constantly hear speeches and presentations and interviews from very well respected people that aren't great at all. I went to my girlfriend's graduation the other day. She got a PhD, which is fantastic. So she's now a doctor, as she keeps on reminding me. She had a graduation ceremony. A speech was given by Ridley Scott, who you may have heard of, one of the most famous directors in Hollywood. You know, directed Blade Runner, Gladiator, all sorts of things. You would have thought that a guy like that would be, you know, very comfortable in front of a large audience giving a speech. You could barely hear him. His words were not in a great sort of structure at all. And I think that was, even though we had to sit through 600 people getting their degrees and having their hands shaken by the head of the university, I would have much rather sat through 1,200 people doing that than listen to Ridley Scott for another 5 minutes. So I wouldn't really have any worries about starting from scratch. If you don't think you're a good communicator, as long as you have the right principles and you keep practicing, then I think there's a bright future in communicating your message, no matter who you are.
That's really amazing, because what you've actually just sort of brought about is sometimes, you know, it's the small things. You know, you may have a message and it's the right message, but it's the how you deliver the message. Can you imagine, like, what you just said is like big, you know, top guy, and then it's like chewing gum. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a small thing, but it actually makes all the big difference in terms of the how you come across, because people might just remember, oh, I remember that guy like chewing gum. And these are some of the things, because of your expertise in this area, you will pick out and help our listeners. And again, what you just said, it's like some people do have or are overconfident. Don't you know who I am, right? I don't need your training. But what you're saying, it's worth investing the time and the money, right, to get somebody who is experiencing this thing in this area to train you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a shortcut to success, for sure. I think that with trial and error, it's possible just to sort of keep going and keep practicing, as long as you have the sort of the right principles behind you. But I think, you know, whilst doing that, you can make a few mistakes which can possibly damage you quite badly. It's better to have a grounding with the right training first, and for someone from a third party standpoint who knows what they're talking about, to be able to you know, let you know where you're going right and where you're going wrong. You know, the chances are the number one thing that we say in media training is to be enthusiastic. And that's where small business people have got a real advantage, and entrepreneurs have got a real advantage over people who are working for larger companies that they don't own, because often they're not passion projects, those larger businesses for those people. They're working there because they're probably getting a large salary, they probably have a huge mortgage that they've got to pay, and what they're thinking is, you know, I've got this interview, I better not screw it up because I don't want to lose my job and have to find another one so I can pay my massive mortgage. And there's a kind of negative pressure going on there. But with entrepreneurs and small business people, your business is your passion invariably. So that passion has a real opportunity to come flooding out and to you know, infuse the program or the newspaper that you're featuring in, but also the audience as well. So I think that's the sort of secret weapon that it's important to tap into when you're doing an interview, and I hope that your listeners will have naturally.
Yeah, it's interesting because most, I mean, I can speak for myself, having done the whole corporate thing to the way all the way to the top, and in terms of the energy that I had, but also other people had. But what you said is almost like at the back of your mind, you always want to protect your job, right? There's certain things that I do today that I would never have done. Have I become a different person? No, but as an entrepreneur, I am free to express the who I am and what I believe in. And I am so passionate about it that that whole enthusiasm that just comes across, right? I mean, the thought of owning sort of a radio station, being a radio presenter, then would have been like way out there, because I always thought about what impact would it have on my job and my employability, because my whole focus was about my job then and the potential jobs I could get in the future. But right now I'm in a very, very different place. I'm very enthusiastic and I'm like, yeah, I know I'm going to make mistakes along the way, but at least I tried, and the passion just keeps me going.
Fantastic.
So
that's
really, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That really comes through. Yeah, for sure.
Most definitely.
Can I ask you about how your sort of your journey's been through your presentation and how you found it at the start and sort of where you are now in terms of feeling comfortable in front of a microphone?
It's actually really amazing because my journey, you're now interviewing me, right? I meant to be interviewing
you.
Flipped. You can't help it. My journey has been interesting because it all started with being, you know, I wanted to speak. I love personal development. I believe in people's kind of, everyone has an innate ability to be the very best. But, you know, we kind of pick up all these beliefs along the way. And I know that having basically, I normally say come all the way from Africa and made it in the corporate in UK, people ask, what is it that is different about you? What did you do? And I say, it's very simple. I'm committed to my own personal development. I don't wait. I never waited for my employer to pay for a course for me. If it costs $3,000, I forfeit the $3,000 and pay for the course because it's my own commitment to my personal development. And so when I was made redundant, my mindset was very different. And because it's like the third time I'd been made redundant, I was like, no way, I cannot live like this. And so I went out and started sort of basically what I used to do, but became more open in terms of sharing about my passion for personal development. And I was invited as a guest on radio. The first time, I cannot tell you just how panicky I was. Everything, it was completely alien because from my understanding, right, you had to have gone through the school of journalism, you had to be all of this stuff and all the things that you wanted, you needed to be before you could get in front of the radio. You had to be an expert in this. And in my mind, I'm just thinking, I've never done this. Who am I? I don't know. All those questions running through my mind. And it was an experience that I had to almost put myself through to overcome it. And first one, second one, third one. And I think it must have been just after the first one, I fell in love with it. I just fell in love with the radio, right? Because obviously I got a recording of the show and I listened to myself. Yes, I was cringing listening to myself because most people are not comfortable with their own voice.
And
once I got over that, I was like, I love this. I was invited on other shows. But on the other hand, I'm actually a speaker. I'm an international speaker, right? So I speak on stage as well. And that again was, there was one time I actually did present at a big event, and the person that gave me feedback really broke me. And it took me a little while to get myself out of that and say, I'm better than that. So that's kind of my experience. But once I've transitioned into it and I prepare a lot. So as you know, I will always contact my guests. There'll be a lot of prep that goes behind the scenes. I don't just turn up and say, hey, let's wing this. There's a lot of prep that goes behind the background, but I love it. And I'm growing into it, right? Yeah. And I'm growing and more than happy to get the training to get better. So that's in a nutshell.
Fantastic. Great. Yeah. Okay, interview over.
Yeah. We are actually going to take a break and we are going to play a song, and I have to own up and say that doing this you have to play PodSafe music. So I was racking my brain thinking, what is PodSafe music? So as I said, I'm learning. We're going to be I'm going to play Searching London, Hugo Kant. Stay with us.
Have you got new fuel elements loaded?
Already,
the road block is about 2,000 feet away. Everyone in that area is pulled back. No traffic allowed in there. The launch area is completely free for safety. The only personnel within the 3,000 feet are belonging from inside the locked house and the test bunker. The only alarm has not been given at the time the alarm was being issued in town. The vehicle mounted at 4 feet.
You are listening to speakonradio.com. Be seen. Be heard. Be present. The place where entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, authors, actors, politicians, creative people and media experts are empowered and inspired to broadcast their passion. Speakonradio.com is a radio platform that has you in mind, bringing you not only inspiration, but practical solutions and opportunities to release your greatness. Tune in now at speakonradio.com. That is speakonradio.com.
Hi, welcome back. I believe we're live. Pete, are you live?
I am. I'm still here.
Okay, excellent, excellent. That's really good. Yeah, you're listening to speakonradio.com with Sarah and my guest, Pete Water, who I keep calling Peter. I do apologize.
That's fine. You and my mum, the same.
Sorry?
You and my mum both call me Peter, so it's okay.
I think I'll stick to Pete, right? But we're talking about discovering how to deal with the media and how you can use the media to promote yourself, promote your brand, promote your business, the right things to do it, the little things that get in the way, and how to overcome all these fears. I remember when we were preparing for this, we mentioned about a simple sentence that one of your ex-clients or someone you coached really, really struggled with, and it's a very senior person. And so this kind of just will help anybody that thinks, oh, it's only me. As I said, you know what, I went on there thinking I can't do this, I can't do this, and I know I'm not alone. Would you mind sharing that with us just to help us kind of just put everything in perspective?
I also in my career have made some corporate films, and I've directed films for the likes of BP and also M&S, which for the non-UK listeners out there is a sort of slightly upmarket sort of supermarket known for selling good food and maybe ladies' underwear. That's the other thing it's very, very famous for. But it's a big mainstay of the UK and one of our biggest companies. And there was a senior executive that I was filming with one day, and they must have about, what do you reckon, Sarah? They must have at least 200 or 300 stores in the UK, I would have thought. And there was, and in most of those stores, there is a restaurant or a cafe and that produces hot food. And this executive was in charge of every single restaurant and every single cafe in the whole of the UK. And in fact, the world, they do have Marks and Spencer's in other parts of the world. I think they've got them in China and other places now. He had the responsibility of saying one sentence for this film, because it was all about showing off to the staff that would be working in these restaurants and in these cafes what an amazing place Marks and Spencer's was to work. That was the basic message of the film. And he had to say a sentence along the lines of, we're really proud that our new hot food on the move brand will be opening in Marks and Spencer's stores across the country soon. It was something like that. It was very, very simple, one sentence thing. We had half an hour scheduled in the day's scheduled to do this sentence, and I thought that would be plenty of time. I'm actually sometimes, one of my faults is that I don't schedule enough time for things, you're sort of traveling and things like that. But I was pretty careful when making the shooting schedule to make sure we had anything in. An hour later, we were still there on take, I would say, 55 or something. And he just stumbled every single time on the sort of the first, second, third word. He would sort of start the sentence and then just go, sorry. And then start again and then sort of get through a couple of words and then sort of would sort of just forget what it was. And this is a guy who I'm sure has to present to board meetings on a regular basis. I'm sure, has made many presentations to sort of small amounts of people as well as large. Sometimes small amounts of people can be more nerve-wracking because you have to look at them right in the eye. But when we put a camera in front of him, he just absolutely went to pieces. And once he'd started messing it up, just couldn't get it back together. And because the time was slightly against us, I think that also added to the pressure of it. And in the end, we did get, I think, one or two takes of him saying this full sentence all the way through. But I think that was the worst example of anyone I've ever worked with. And there's been a few bad ones, but I think that was the worst one. We were all tearing our hair out by the end of it. But I try to stay calm and be enthusiastic, but it was pretty to try and help him, but it was pretty tough towards the end.
It's amazing. I don't know what actually happens. The camera, it's almost like, I don't know what it is that happens when we put people in front of a camera. I remember I was with a group of entrepreneurs and we were meant to film like, I'm literally like a 1 minute video clip, right? Mm. And one of the guys was like, I did 121 little, it's not actually a minute, like 100 something takes. But if you have a general conversation with him, he's the most conversant person that you can have a conversation with. Yeah. But just standing in front of the camera, that was it.
Yeah.
He's just going to get a sentence out. What is it? What do you think it is that, so that this can help our listeners kind of just overcome that whole camera? It's a phobia, it's a fear in terms of the relationship with the camera.
Yeah, I just think that it's a very, very unnatural thing to speak naturally into an inanimate object. And there's three things that are going to help you achieve a more natural performance. And they are preparation, and can you guess the third one?
Preparation.
I think what especially as there's so many cameras around now, everybody has a smartphone that has a video capability, and you know the younger generation now sort of have a saying that if it's not on YouTube, it doesn't exist, you know. So everything is getting filmed. But interestingly, if you actually are filming someone and they're doing something, you know, sort of silly or something that would make a sort of amusing YouTube clip, but then you actually ask them to talk about what they were doing straight down the barrel of the lens, again, they can't do it. I mean, I used to sort of work quite a lot with people out on the street with presenters, and you see it quite a lot on the news, especially on live news channels, where there's somewhat some sort of idiot in the background, you know, waving his arms around or something. So, okay, come and film me. And then occasionally we'll go, all right, we will film you. What do you think about this? And then we'll go, oh, I don't know. So and that's because they weren't prepared for that scenario, and it just is a really sort of uncomfortable situation that every single presenter has just overcome through years of practice. And the thing to do, if you are ever in a position where you're going to be interviewed for a television program or a radio program, is just, if you can beforehand, sit down with someone else and ask them to interview you in this, hopefully kind of in the style of how that radio show or that TV show will be, and record it and watch it back and see how you performed, get someone to give you some feedback on how you performed, and then do it again. If you've got time, do it again. And in that way, when you come to the real thing, you'll find that you have some sort of messages, you have some sentences kind of pre-programmed in your brain that you're used to performing in that environment, and it's not unnatural to you. And that will make life so much easier. And that's just the thing that everybody sort of completely underestimates, particularly when I was working in the corporate world, making corporate films. Going back to the example of the guy who was the hot food chief at M&S, you know, they just sort of really underestimate how it is going to be in front of a camera in particular. And also it's not just being in front of a camera. A microphone is just as bad and even sort of more dangerous in a way, because you think just because it's a microphone, you're not being filmed, it's a bit more casual. Sometimes, you know, people can just let slip things that they didn't really mean to say because they're kind of in a nervous situation, and they can just ramble on for too long and just say that extra little sentence. And that can be a problem. And being with a newspaper journalist or a blogger or something like that, again, you know, that's again even worse potentially.
So would you say then basically don't say what you wouldn't write? Yeah, so you know, sometimes when we're talking, we just let our mouth run away with us.
Yeah, exactly.
But if I was to be writing an email to you or to anybody else or writing on a blog, there are certain things that I wouldn't write.
Exactly. So again, in media training, we've got a sort of saying that you don't want to say anything you wouldn't want to see in the newspapers the next day. That's what you've got to keep in your mind.
Okay. And I think this is kind of brings us very well into one of the points that I wanted us to cover. It's like the journalist is not your friend.
Absolutely. Correct. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And there was like, what can you share on this? And sort of giving us examples from your wealth of experience of the people that you've met who obviously fell for this badly.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few examples really where some people that I know worked with a charity, and they had the patron of that charity was Cherie Blair. Do you know Tony Blair's wife, who's the lawyer? Yeah. And it was a charity to help out with AIDS in Africa. Fantastic cause. Mm-hmm. And the journalist came down. It was going to be a big interview all about the charity. The interview went on for about an hour. It was fantastic. They didn't ask her anything about the usual things that you might want to ask Cherie Blair about, because that was the sort of the context of the interview. And it was great. It's going to be big sort of couple of page spread in the Evening Standard, which they were really delighted with.
Yes.
Then they all caught a cab after that, the journalist, Cherie Blair, and my friend who was working on the thing. And yes. The interview's over, you would think. So they started making small talk in the taxi. Mm-hmm. And Cherie Blair said the words, Tony still thrills me. And guess what the headline was of the next day's Evening Standard? Cherie: Tony still thrills me. Cherie Blair reveals that their marriage is still alive and kicking. There was hardly a mention of this charity at all. And they sort of had this whole sort of big piece about how, the sort of how their marriage was still sort of exciting for both of them and things like that. And and he felt very betrayed by this journalist because that's a kind of rookie mistake that that people make. I mean, they sort of, at the moment you encounter the journalist, the moment you shake hands with them, until the moment they have left the same building as you, the interview is not over. So you've got to be very, very careful about what you say. And sometimes, the journalist is not your friend, even when they are your friend. And I've got another little story, if we've got time,
even though they're your friend.
Yeah, because there's a friend of mine who was a journalist for the Sunday Times. Yeah. And she used to work with a guy called Jim Watson, who you may know was one of the two people that discovered DNA back in the or sequenced DNA back in the 50s. I'm not quite sure what the scientific term is for it, but he subsequently, gone on to be this huge sort of star of science, of chemistry. And he was incredibly well funded in America and built up this research center in New England, where when my friend was a student, she managed to get an internship working there in the summer. And she then went to, finished university and gradually became a journalist writing about science, and was sent back because of this personal connection to get an exclusive interview from this guy, Jim Watson. And they talked about his research again for many hours, and where he was going and what he was looking forward to doing. And a lot of it, was fascinating work in this sort of DNA kind of sphere and genetics and all that sort of thing. But then again, he let slip just in casual conversation, but unfortunately it was recorded on her dictaphone, that he believed that black people were didn't have the same mental capabilities, genetically speaking, as white people, and so they would never achieve the same things. And unbelievable,
open,
right?
Wide open, what?
Yeah, and he said that as a sort of casual remark, not thinking that it would be included in the interview, but it was on tape. She went back to London, played the tape to her editor, and she knew what a devastating this effect this would have if it came out, and because she was his friend, she sort of tried to protect him. But she said, oh, well, look, there's this thing, he said it, but I think we should not, you know, try and reveal what happened. Yeah. The editor, being, you know, the editor, said, no way, that is the story. So all the other stuff was forgotten about. The sort of racial story became the thing, and it became a worldwide sort of viral story that he, you know, the inventor of DNA says that black people will never be as intelligent as white people. He lost all his funding. I think his you know, all the sort of funders in the States pulled out. His research center is now no longer there, and he's ruined basically for the rest of his life, and all those fantastic achievements that he had are gone like that, just because of one sort of slip remark. Yeah,
remark, so that it was never meant to be.
Yeah, so you've got to be super careful when you're with journalists that you don't say anything that you shouldn't.
Yeah,
but yeah. You know, the good news is that journalists can't control what comes out of your mouth. You have 100% control.
Basically, you can't blame the journalists for what came out of your mouth.
No, exactly. You can't control what they write. You can't control how they cut your interview. You can't control the tone of how they present you, but you have 100% control of what comes out of your mouth. And if you don't say it, a journalist can't write it, a journalist can't broadcast it. So, you know, with a little bit of self-control and watching out for the traps that some journalists will try and set for you, you can definitely be absolutely fine. I mean, you know, but the good news is that most of us don't have a secret as big as that Jim Watson one hiding in the back of our brains and are just looking to promote our businesses. So I wouldn't think that you know, you've got anything to worry about, unless it turns out you are a massive racist. But I don't think most people
are. It's interesting you say that, because and this obviously has probably nothing to do with the media, but it's actually very similar. And I'll probably give two examples whereby, in the corporate, I'm a professional negotiator, and obviously I worked with like multi-million pound contracts. So I worked with like CEOs and that kind of level. And one time I was sort of working on this project. It was a massive project, I think probably about £7 million. And the gentleman who was the CEO of the company I was working with was at some meetings in US. And so he couldn't come for the pre-meeting that I wanted to have. And so he asked his head of sales to actually be there. And I rang him because I kind of knew they kind of didn't qualify, but we had a business relationship and therefore it's only right that they included in the process. So I wanted them to give them a chance, because you know you can work so many things out to make a contract work. And so I had a conversation with this head of sales and I said, you know what? And he couldn't do within the time frame that I had set. But because we had a relationship with him, I said, you know what? Okay, let me just allow you an extra day, 2 days. We agreed the day we would have the meeting. But the most bizarre thing happened. It was a very normal conversation, right? A very professional conversation. But from the meeting room, when I finished the conversation, back to my desk, he had sent an email supposedly to his colleague, right?
Right.
But you know that little button called like reply to all?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very dangerous button because, I don't know, he had deleted his colleagues, right? And replied to me. It was the most racist thing.
Oh, really?
It was so racist. I couldn't speak. I was Crikey. Sitting at my desk, totally stunned, thinking that's not the person I just spoke to.
Yeah.
So very, very similar. So I'm thinking it can't be the same person. We had a very professional conversation, but this was a very racist email to his colleague. And of course, it was a business decision. So I had to involve like the management. I was actually really senior to actually say it's a business decision at the end of the day, but I would never work with them. And in terms of what do we do next, because I mean, it was so racist. And for them to be having that conversation as colleagues within the same company, it would mean it's endemic within the company. That's my conclusion. And so the things that people say outside of the camera, outside of the interview, is off record, right? Mm. It can be detrimental. So of course, they never got the contract and they never worked with the organization again after that. And I think also recently, there's the whole thing about the slave owners, and there's a recent BBC program, I think, on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's right.
You said that one, right?
Yeah.
And it goes on to say about some big name in the film industry in US when they were doing a show, how when they found out that, I don't know whether it was a great-great-grandfather that owned slaves, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, we can't talk about that because it's going to ruin my reputation. It's not good for me.
I think it was Ben Affleck, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. And of course, it came out. It's again, it's a clear example of what you say that you don't want covered, but actually you mentioned it.
Yeah.
So that's a classic example. We're actually going to take a break and we are going to then come back. We still have quite a lot to cover. So if you're listening, to speakonradio.com hosted by Blog Talk Radio. And today is our very, very first ever interview. We're going to listen to One Word by Cortel. Stay tuned.
are listening to speakonradio.com. Be seen. Be heard. Be present. The place where entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, authors, actors, politicians, creative people and media experts are empowered and inspired to broadcast their passion. SpeakOnRadio.com is a radio platform that has you in mind, bringing you not only inspiration, but practical solutions and opportunities to release your greatness. Tune in now at SpeakOnRadio.com. That is, SpeakOnRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to SpeakOnRadio.com with Sarah and my guest at Pete Water, and we are talking about dealing with the media, discovering how to use the media to promote yourself, promote your brand, and build a massive business. It's like fast-tracking yourself to the top, because obviously, if you get there, you get publicity, front page, second, third page, you are done. People will start contacting you, and that's why it's important you stay tuned to hear what more Pete has to offer. Pete, we've just gone over about the journalist is not your friend, right? Mm. And we also covered preparation. And I'm going to just say it, actually, we're not here like to breed fear in terms of like the journalist is not your friend. You know, as I just shared that, if you have nothing to hide in whatever conversation you'd have with your friends, then you have nothing to hide, right? I normally say just be transparent. Just really be transparent that anything that you know does not support your values and does not support the other person's values, well, it's about time you kill it. And as much as I normally sometimes feel sorry when people are saying, I didn't say that, I always think to myself, well, you're carrying a wrong value. Sorry, and probably just as well, you got found out. So there's a deeper problem than it's just the media. The media just basically captured what you said. So if you have nothing to hide, and as you said, you know, we are talking to entrepreneurs, we're talking to business owners, the conversations are going to revolve around that, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we then talk about context, yes.
Yeah.
And what would you share with our listeners about context?
Well, I think, it's just context can sort of be everything, really, because you've got to make sure that your message that you are portraying is the right one. And you've got to know about what context it's going to be shown in. And usually, if we are as small business people going to be featured on a program or featured in a newspaper or featured on a blog, the chances are it's not all going to be about us, especially when we first start out. I think this is a big problem that most people have when they first hire a PR company or when they first engage with the media. They kind of think, wow, I've spent the last year or 2 years or 3 years or my whole life creating this amazing product. And in your head, it is amazing. But for everybody else out there, as I'm sure as small business people, we've all found out, everybody is like, so what? So the chances of you getting your thing to excite a journalist who knows that they have this sort of vast audience to entertain, the chances of that happening and you just being the sole focus of a whole program or a whole article or a whole blog piece is quite unlikely. However, what you can be is part of a larger story. And this is sort of one of the big messages that I would try and convey to your audience to get your head around, is that you've got to try and get yourself in the context of a larger story and be a part of that. And then that is your way in. If you were a good example of a bigger trend that's going along, thing is, you don't want to be in the wrong context. You want to be in the right context. And it's sort of easier said than done to some extent. But just to give you an example, again, from when I was when I was working at the BBC, I spent 4 years working at BBC News Channel, which is, for people who don't know, it's the sort of the rolling 24-hour news channel, the biggest one in the UK. And there was this story on housing, which is a big ongoing issue in the UK. There's just not, you know, small country with a lot of people in it, and there's not enough housing to go around, and housing is very expensive. So there was this guy from the government who's actually a lord, who's in the House of Lords, was coming on to talk about a housing issue. And there was a young guy who's probably at about sort of 17, 18, who's struggling to get housing. And they'd actually been on a show before together. And this guy, this young guy, was very smart, very switched on, had very good arguments about why he sort of needed some housing, why he deserved it, and how the laws that this lord was going to bring in would sort of stop him from getting somewhere to live. And this lord, he just didn't have any answers, because he was used to talking to people in government and sort of journalists that he sort of knew how to sort of combat with through words and through sort of through communication. And he wasn't used to speaking to just the sort of young guy from you know, a not such great neighborhood of London who had a different way of communicating. But it was obvious that the audience would all be behind this young guy and would all be against this sort of privileged lord. And he came into our studio, saw that this young guy was there again, who would take him on in front of the cameras, immediately, yes. immediately freaked out, because he knew he was in for a hard time, yeah. And turned around and walked out. And that was pretty much the only time I saw anybody walk out of the studio and turn down the chance to broadcast. But this was a big mistake on his part, for two reasons, really. One, the chances are that we would never invite him to come back again to talk about anything. So his reputation amongst journalists was kind of ruined. But probably, secondly, he left the airtime to be solely taken up by this guy. So he wasn't able to put his own side of the story. The context story. All then became about this other guy being able to sort of put his side of the story. So it was really good for him. He had, you know, 3 minutes of BBC airtime in which to explain why this law wasn't such a good idea at all, and why this lord was a sort of a bad guy. And you know, it was an example of the wrong context to be in. But as long as you do your homework,
yes,
and you are appearing on a show with other people, and appearing in an article with other people that are like-minded and that are coming from the same direction as you, and have a, you know that you're going to be able to put forward your message in the way that you want to put it, then that is a good thing. And because your only chance, really, as a small business, as I said, but I can't say this enough, to get on the media to begin with, unless you've done something truly, truly, truly remarkable, but that is incredibly rare, is to sort of get on this sort of bandwagon of a larger story, and that could be a sort of huge variety of things, which I can expand on if you want, but maybe we'll sort of talk about something else.
I mean, we can go on that, but I was actually going to say, at the moment, we're organizing, I'm authoring a book, which will be launched in Hollywood, LA, in the end of August. And there's going to be like a massive Authors Award ceremony, and I'm sure you're aware of it. Right.
Yes.
And the press will be there. The film producers will be there. And one of the things that we are saying to authors, and there are probably authors who are listening today, is that how being part of a bigger story, being part of something almost bigger than yourself. Because if we're inviting the press, they're going to be there. We're inviting like the film producers are going to be there. if you ever, if you're going to have a chance to be interviewed, which is one of the other things we're going to be doing, we're going to be interviewing people. Nobody will come looking for you for an interview, as you say, unless you've done something like massive. But as you say, if you're part of a bigger thing where people are being interviewed, where press is present, you're increasing your chances of being heard.
Exactly. It's a perfect example of being part of a collective story that's much, much more powerful. Because, you know, 30 or I don't know how many authors are involved. Do you know exactly?
A lot. We're sort of looking. Yeah, we're looking at probably a few hundred authors and their families. It's a big event. Right. And it's an exclusive event as well. It's not a public event. It's an exclusive event. It's to celebrate authors, but also kind of to help them broadcast their passion, because we understand, and obviously we work with you, we understand how difficult it is for entrepreneurs, authors, more business owners to get the attention that they deserve. They do all the work.
Yeah.
And they need the attention, but it's the how to do it and to create a platform where they will be able to get interviews, where they'll be able to get speaking opportunities, get interviews. And we say, like, the, you know, the film industry, Hollywood, that's where it is, are going to be present. So it's big.
Yeah. I mean, that's a sort of, it's a great example, because, you know, one self-published author by themselves, you know, who wants to know about that, basically? You know, who cares? But, you know, hundreds of them collecting in the same place, who have the same story, who can support each other, you know, who I'm sure many of them have fantastic human interest stories and have connected with each other and have promoted each other. Suddenly that becomes a much, much more interesting thing for a journalist to be able to go and cover. You know, it's a good example of the phenomenon of self-publishing, which is going on now. That's a sort of, it's a new kind of media story in itself that has the potential to, you know, totally wipe away the existing publishing industry, or at least kind of, to use a sort of horrible 21st century business word, it has the potential to disrupt it here are, you know, 200 self-published authors or gathering in the same place. It's a sort of physical manifestation of the disruption of the publishing industry. So as a journalist, that's a pretty powerful thing to go and cover. So, yeah, great example.
Oh, excellent. And obviously on that note, if you're an author and you're listening and or you have a manuscript in your cupboard and you're thinking, what do I do with it? Which is a problem that a lot of authors suffer from. A lot of people want to write books, but they don't know how to go about it. They don't know who to contact, because as you say, traditionally, people used to go to the publishers and it was very expensive. There was nothing like self-publishing. But if you're that person, you're an author, you've never launched your book, you've written your book, you don't know what to do with it, connect with us, speakonradio.com, and we will tell you about the Authors Award ceremony happening 29th of August in LA. It's a Hollywood experience, okay? I had to plug in that because you know what you're saying about being part of a larger story and the impact it has and the attention that it will get somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that was that was a classic example of taking control of the interview and bridging to what you want to talk about, which is another thing we teach in media training. If I was going to do an example of now, I would say, well, and that's exactly the kind of thing that we talk about a lot in our main coaching program on dealwiththemedia.com, called Deal with the Media with Sir Trevor McDonald. So there we go. I've got my own plug in there.
You got your own plug in. Did I just get a tick? Yeah. I just got a tick from an expert as a plug-in.
There we go. Exactly. Yeah. Congratulations.
And I do know, actually, probably at the end of this show, that you will be giving some sort of content to start people off in terms of those initial questions, the how to go about it and where to go about it. I believe that you're going to be doing that. Is there something that you have we can talk about at the end of the show?
Yes, absolutely. There's some free training available on the site, which I will be... I will happily direct them to at the end.
The end of the show. That's really, really excellent. We're actually going to take another break, and I'm just amazed we're having so much fun. When we come back, we have a question or two from our listeners, which we will be answering before the end of the show. So we are going to play. Yeah, we're going to have, which is probably our last song, Light Up Tonight by Alex Boyd.
I am lost for words. I just stand here shaking. You are never gone when I'm without you. Your abandoned purse and my incessant pacing are all I need to know how I miss you. The way you shine so bright, girl, you could be my lighthouse, illuminating my ride. Oh, my one need to ensure my freedom, but now I need something more, like everything we had before. Oh, oh. The fire burning, does someone comfort you when you've been hurting? I have lost my thirst for all deliberating. What is mine is yours for the taking. The way you shine so bright, girl, you could be my lighthouse, illuminating my route. Oh, my one need to ensure my freedom, but now I need something more, like everything we had before.
Are listening to speakonradio.com. Be seen, be heard, be present. The place where entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, authors, actors, politicians, creative people and media experts are empowered and inspired to broadcast their passion. speakonradio.com is a radio platform that has you in mind, bringing you not only inspiration, but practical solutions and opportunities to release your greatness. Tune in now at speakonradio.com. That is speakonradio.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back. It's Sarah Lister here on speakonradio.com with my guest, Pete Walter, who is helping us discover how to deal with the media, how to use the media to promote ourselves, promote our businesses and our brand. And so far, oh my, we have had so much. I hope you've had pen and paper writing down exactly what to do. And at the end, Pete will be offering some content to start you on this journey. Pete, are you on the line?
I'm still here. Yep. Absolutely.
Excellent. So you know what we're going to do before we cover anything else? We're going to answer some of the questions from our listeners. You ready?
Fantastic. Yep. Fire away.
Yeah. Okay. So we're here. Okay. Great interview. Very comprehensive and informative. The question is, when defining media, would that include traditional as well as social media? And if so, are there different techniques when approaching each?
Well, I think what I was talking about mainly today was traditional, what we would define as traditional media. That's the thing that I mainly concentrate on. There's a lot of people out there who have tons of advice on social media, and I would, suggest that that's a lot of that is very, very valid. And social media is a new thing comparatively with traditional media. So, the rules of engagement are still being kind of established. I mean, the thing I would say about how most people think that social media is the way to go because it's very cheap, it's free basically to engage. It's immediately accessible. Everybody can just sign up for a Twitter account or a Facebook account and off you go. But I think where people kind of ignore traditional media is because they think it's a bit inaccessible and it's only the sort of domain of the successful and the super rich. But really, if you think about the numbers, people are kind of happy when they get, 50,000 or 100,000 views on a YouTube video. Mm. And that sort of might take place over a year, perhaps getting those views. You go on a TV show sort of the nightly news, you're going to be in front of 5 million, 10 million people in one go. That is just, instant 5 million views in inverted commas. So what I would encourage people to do is social media is absolutely great. And I think it's going to become more and more important. And a lot of the rules that we talked about today, like sort of not putting anything on in the media that you wouldn't want to appear in the newspaper the next day, I think those definitely apply to social media as well as traditional media. But my main message to everybody is just because you're in a small business or you're starting out as an entrepreneur is don't be afraid to approach the main media because it just unlocks a lot of power that social media still, I would suggest, has a long way to go to catch up with.
You actually made a very valid point, and I do have to put my hand up and say probably I've never seen it that way, even though actually one of the main reasons that we started Speak on Radio is because we know the power of what we'd call almost like instant media, like real time. So if you're live on radio, right, it's still there, so traditional media, but it's very powerful in connecting you to your audience right there and then. And also the other thing that it does is people are listening to a business show because they're interested in business. Right. But when you post a clip on social media, you're targeting your 1,000, 2,000 friends who are interested in a million things. And actually, in most cases, unless obviously you publish them public, you're only reaching your friends. And there's a real skill that goes behind the people that use social media for business. There's a lot of training that goes on in terms of how to target. But a lot of people just throw stuff out there.
Absolutely.
And as you say, you're not really targeting. Whereas when you speak on radio, like we are now, the people who have actually tuned in listening today because they're interested in what we are talking about.
Yeah.
It's it's a choice, and it's the same with TV.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for answering that question. And let's see, I'm sure I have some other questions here. Obviously, somebody likes your comment about preparation. And then they're saying, what's the other P to make it the four Ps?
I think I only said three, but
I know he's obviously the four P's, and I said there'll be preparation.
I probably preparation again. Yeah, exactly. You can't have enough P's. That's the answer to that one.
You can't have enough. You can't have enough enough P's. Okay, we're gonna come back on that because you know what? We are on the last 9 minutes of the show. I can't believe an hour and a half is almost over. We have so much to cover. And the big question, we've covered a lot of things, right? And we actually, one of the things we're saying, you know, be part of a larger story. If you can't be part of a larger story, how can you differentiate yourself so that suddenly the media, right, wants to know who you are? What are some of the things that you would advise that, you know, our listeners can do to get that media attention?
Yeah, well, I think a big win can be by using your customers or your clients to create the bigger story for yourself. And I actually just wrote a blog about this on the dealwiththemedia.com site. So this isn't the free giveaway that I was going to talk about, but it's something that's in my mind at the moment. So it's probably good.
But it's also very powerful content, right?
Yeah. It's basically, if you go again to a journalist and say, I've got this new mineral water that I've created, again, they're going to say sort of, so what? But if you go to a journalist and say, well, look, I have created this new mineral water that I know this running club that I am part of, I've given it out for free, and it's improved all their times by 10%. Suddenly, that's a bigger story that a journalist is going to be interested in. And better yet, if you could then go to a school and say, this water has also improved the grades of all the pupils that I've given it to by, 10%. Suddenly, that's part of a bigger story that your product is creating, that's driven by human interest. Because guess what? Everybody wants to run 10% faster, and everybody wants their kids to have 10% better grades. So that's a kind of human kind of emotional story that will play well in the media and that a journalist is going to latch onto. But if you just go and say, look, I've got this water, it tastes nice, it's good in a nice bottle, what do you think? They're probably not going to give you much time. So I would say make sure you go out to your clients, make sure you go out to your customers, and you collect these fantastic anecdotes of how the product or service has changed their lives, and how also if you can persuade them to be interviewed by the journalist as well, that could make a sort of very, very powerful thing. Because again, it's not just you talking, it's sort of, there's many strands of support to your story. Yeah. There's many proof points.
Your testimonials and social proof.
Exactly. It's just like a testimonial on a website. And for those who are trying to sell things online, I'm sure that you know how powerful those can be and how much they can help your sales. Yeah. It's the same when you go to a journalist. You've got to have at least two proof points, I would say, to every story that you convey in the media. And you know, you're only one, so you need to get another one from somewhere.
Okay, no, that's really good. It always reminds me the classic of the purple cow. A lot of people do know where that story comes from, Seth Godin. It's like, you know what, if you see, I don't know, normal standard cow driving along beautiful countryside of England, right? You see cows all the time. They look exactly the same. You've seen them for years. But if you drive past and you see a purple cow, you will definitely stop.
Yeah.
Because is like, Papo cow, really? Seriously? And it's as you kind of just say, like, anybody selling the example used of bottled water is bottled water, so what?
Yeah.
Why is it different for the next, you know, next one, bottled water? I have a problem when I go buy water because there's too much to choose from and they all look the same.
Exactly.
Right? And that, so that's what we're saying. Another question that we have, and it's around that whole thing, that whole thing of actually standing out and kind of differentiating yourself, is can you be popular and different at the same time?
I think that's, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you said that, the first person that popped into my mind was Lady Gaga, who I think is very different and very, very popular. She's, I think, the sort of leading person on Twitter with the most followers of anybody. So, I mean, I know that's in the music world rather than in the business world, but I think her example would absolutely apply. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a huge cliche, isn't it, to talk about Richard Branson when you're talking about business, yeah. But there is a guy who's incredibly popular, despite, you know, yeah, running a huge multinational business, and, you know, rumors are he's not always as nice to everybody as he appears when he is on camera, but yeah, he is popular and and also different, because, you know, how many CEOs regularly sort of skydive, hang on to the helicopters, you know, dress up as air hostesses and all the things that he does, you know, but his being different has made him more popular, if anything, I would say. And you know,
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree. Even his branding is all around. He differentiates himself. And we are on 3 minutes. Can you believe it? And because we did say, so as much as we want to take, we have more questions. And if you did send your question, they haven't had it answered, we can bring Pete by popular demand, and we can sort of make arrangements, because, you know, I belong to the Academy of Significance, and I do use the material that Pete is providing on his training on his website, and it is very, very helpful, especially for me personally, for my business, and for the event, the Authors Award Ceremony that we're talking about on the 29th of August in Hollywood. So, Pete, we did say that we're going to give something to our listeners, especially since we're not going to be able to cover everything. Would you like to give us more details about that in terms of how they can connect and in terms of the more extra stuff that they might, you know, that they may want, because people are at different levels, different places, please?
Yeah, over, sure. Thank you. Basically, if you go to the homepage of my website, dealwiththemedia.com, it's all one word, dealwiththemedia.com, you can, there's a button that says get some free training. Hit that button, yeah, and then basically you'll be able to access a video which takes you through a 5-step acronym, and each one of these, the letters that form the acronym, it spells truth, T-R-U-T-H, each one of those letters stands for an element that will really make you stand out to the media. And if you manage to combine all 5 elements in the makeup truth, you will almost be guaranteed to get a journalist interested in your story. So it's a thing that we teach in media training to our sort of blue chip companies, and is I've seen it work time and time again. And so that's really something that I would recommend that everybody goes and grabs as soon as possible.
And the website was?
Dealwiththemedia.com. So DEALWITHMEDIA.com.
And they can connect with you?
Yeah, all our social media is easily accessible on that website. And there's an email address up there, which will come straight through to me if they want to get in touch.
Running. We have 40 seconds and we will be cut off. So it's been a pleasure having you, Pete. Thank you so much on behalf of speakonmedia.com, on behalf of our listeners. We want to say thank you so much. Connect with us on Facebook or Deal with the Media, where you can have more content. We'll be back next week. We will send you the link. Thank you so much. It's our first show, and I believe that we've had fun, and so have you. See you next week. Goodbye. Bye, Pete.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
You are listening to speakonradio.com. Be seen. Be heard. Be present. The place where entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, authors, actors, politicians, creative people, and media experts are empowered and inspired to broadcast their passion. SpeakOnRadio.com is a radio platform that has you in mind, bringing you not only inspiration, but practical solutions and opportunities to release your...